ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, the Commonwealth agrees to boost the funding of the nation's hospitals by $25 billion. Also, Nine Entertainment sells its radio network to an unlikely buyer. And Aussies clinch a title at the tennis, taking out the mixed doubles final.
Piers kicks her back and out, he nets it! It's the mixed doubles double for Piers and Gadecki. They defend their crown as wildcards.
What a finish!
After a lengthy deadlock with the states and territories, the federal government has agreed to allocate an extra $25 billion to fund public hospitals for the next 5 years. The deal was made at a meeting of National Cabinet today and takes the overall funding of the sector to just under $220 billion over that five-year period. In return for the funding boost from the Commonwealth, the states have agreed to help reduce the growth of the National Disability Insurance Scheme. The Prime Minister is spruiking the deal as a significant national reform. Rachel Mealy reports.
There's been a standoff between the Commonwealth and states and territories for many months over hospital funding. Today, a breakthrough.
We've reached a landmark agreement to deliver record funding to state and territory hospitals, but also secure the future of the National Disability Insurance Scheme.
The Prime Minister says the deal will make a real difference in hospitals around the country.
This agreement represents one of the most significant national reforms in living memory. These reforms will ensure that Australians can continue to access world-class healthcare as well as disability supports.
There's been argy-bargy between the states and the Commonwealth over the growing costs of running hospitals and who should fit the bill. But in the end, Dad's credit card picked up the tab.
As part of this deal, the Commonwealth will provide an additional $25 billion for public hospitals to reach a record $219.6 billion over the next 5 years.
The members of National Cabinet were motivated to get the deal inked today. The South Australian government is about to go into caretaker mode ahead of the state election, and any delay may have pushed further negotiations out by a number of months. Tasmania's Premier Jeremy Rockliffe says he's pleased to get the deal done.
This has been some two-year journey. There's been some very strong advocacy from all premiers and chief ministers to best represent their communities. And this outcome, as I say again today, is welcome. It's one that does have significant uplift in funding and one that we can support our respective health systems further going forward.
New South Wales Premier Chris Minns says the money won't be a quick fix given ongoing shortages in aged and disability care and the ageing population.
Look, it'll go a long way to solving those problems, but those challenges have been in the system for a while, and it won't simply be a question of funding from the state or the Commonwealth.
Aged care is a Commonwealth responsibility, but the states argue that their hospitals are overwhelmed because patients can't find a place in a nursing home. They argue they should receive more hospital funding to account for it. Queensland's Premier David Crisafulli says today's deal gives him hope that the problem's being addressed.
If you're asking me whether or not I would have liked to have seen more, of course, and if you're asking whether or not we're going to fight for more in the future, you bet. But we've taken a really big step forward today, a really big step forward. And one of the things that the Prime Minister has spoken about is aged care. Now, this isn't something that's emerged in the last 2 minutes. It's been there a long, long time. Now, we've got to get that right. Right now in Queensland, we've got 1,250 patients staring at a roof who should be given the dignity of that care in aged care. And that's really important to us. And that's not about dollars, that's about dignity. And the willingness to work on that and the willingness for the federal government to say that is an important issue, combined with the extra funding today, shows a willingness to work together.
The Australian Medical Association says today's announcement alone won't be enough to stop the decline in hospital performance, with patients waiting too long for emergency surgery, longer waits for essential surgery, and ambulance ramping. Catholic Health Australia says the commitment represents a significant and necessary step towards strengthening public hospitals.
Rachel Mealy. The federal government's plan to divert some children with autism or developmental delays from the National Disability Insurance Scheme appears to be a step closer today after today's deal between the federal and state governments. The federal health minister announced the government's Thriving Kids program last year, but a formal agreement to start it was tied to this hospital deal. The program is one of several significant changes coming into effect this year to rein in the rising cost of the NDIS, and some NDIS participants and their families are worried about what's to come. Here's our National Disability Affairs reporter, Naz Campanella.
The NDIS was a godsend for former disability care worker Penny Layla after she had a stroke in 2020. Her second child, Bethany, says without it, they would not have been able to get their mother out of hospital.
It meant she could come home. It meant that she could regain some function, some independence, get the therapies that she needed, just live, really.
In 2022, Penny's plan was cut to 5 hours a day, despite her medical team's insistence she needed around-the-clock care. The family had the plan reinstated, but now they've had another cut, this time by almost 50%, which means a significant reduction in funding for carers, as well as speech and physiotherapy. Penny's youngest child, Caitlin, has moved in with her mum to care for her.
We thought that the stroke was the bad bit, but the ongoing uncertainty and having to fight just to have basic care and dignity for mum is really upsetting.
Bethany says without the ongoing therapy, the progress her mother has made in regaining the use of her right hand and walking short distances with assistance has regressed.
To see how sad she is watching that decline when she's working as hard as she can, but she doesn't have the help anymore, it's very hard to watch.
The NDIS has grown to cost $50 billion a year, and the government has introduced a range of changes recently to rein it in. One of those measures was a target to slow growth of the overall budget to 8% per year. That was announced in 2023, and it could be reached as early as this year. Today, National Cabinet agreed to revise that down to 6%. And the new deal on hospital funding agreed at National Cabinet paves the way for a new system of supports outside the NDIS called Thriving Kids. That program, to support some children with mild to moderate developmental delay and autism, will be run by states in health and early childhood settings, but funded jointly with the Commonwealth. The first phase of Thriving Kids will begin on the 1st of October before finishing its rollout in 2028. Details about how the program will work are yet to be revealed. Emma Bennison is the CEO of Disability Advocacy Network Australia and says participants and their families are worried.
I think there's a real concern about lack of certainty. I think a genuine concern about harm being done to people because the reforms are going so quickly.
The NDIS now assists more than 700,000 participants. Emma Bennison says making it financially sustainable must be a priority, but not at the expense of people's supports. Penny Layla's daughter Bethany has lost faith in the direction of the NDIS and the government.
I think they are chasing cost cuts above safety at every point.
In a statement, NDIS Minister Jenny McAllister says the total cost of both payments and plan budgets for NDIS participants have gone up in recent years. She says the federal government continues to work with all relevant parties on the changes coming in this year, and the new planning model will lead to fairer and more consistent decision-making and funding to meet the disability support needs of participants.
Naz Campanella. A big shake-up of the Australian media is on the way, with Nine Entertainment selling its talk radio network to hotel and pokies billionaires the Laundie family for $56 million. The network includes major stations like 2GB in Sydney and 3AW in Melbourne. Leading the family's negotiations was Craig Laundie, the former New South Wales Liberal MP. So why is a family that made its fortune in pubs getting into the radio business? Rachel Hayter prepared this report.
Breaking news, 2GB and Nine Radio have just been sold.
Host of Sydney radio station 2GB's breakfast show, Ben Fordham, told his listeners this morning that Nine Entertainment has finalised an agreement to sell its radio network. The buyer? Billionaire publican Arthur Laundy and his family.
The Laundy family have been in business for a long time. They treat people well. They're really good people. And that's a great start. And they love 2GB.
The price tag is $56 million. For the radio network of 2GB and 2UE in Sydney, 3AW and Magic 1278 in Melbourne, 4BC and 4BH in Brisbane, and 6PR in Perth. It's far less than the $275 million the network was valued at 7 years ago. Nine Entertainment took full control of what was then Macquarie Media Radio Network in 2019. But publisher of media industry newsletters Mumbrella and Unmade, Tim Burrows, says talkback radio never sat comfortably with the Nine brand.
Commercially, they never quite fired under Nine. Now, some of it was they never fully made peace with the audience profile and the presenter profile. At that point, they still had, for instance, Alan Jones on air, who created major challenges when it came to monetizing that audience because there would often be boycotts, you know, because of his political views.
While it's too soon to say whether the Laundy family office will change the editorial direction of the network, Tim Burrows says there are typically two kinds of media proprietors.
The ones who are church and state, you know, absolutely there's an agreed strategy and we'll leave you alone. And others who want to own an asset because of the power and influence that it actually brings.
And he argues the sale price gives some hint about what kind of proprietor the Laundies might be.
Looking at the headline price, it certainly seems like a price that someone who is purely doing it for rational reasons would not pay. You know, based on the kind of the last couple of years of profits, it looks like they're overpaying unless they're buying the audience and the influence.
The Laundies have an estimated net worth of $1.75 billion and own more than 40 pubs in New South Wales. Arthur Laundy is the father of former Liberal MP Craig Laundy, who was a junior minister in Malcolm Turnbull's government, and Stu Laundy, who was a former contestant on Network 10's dating show, The Bachelorette. So what kind of influence might the Laundy family be looking for? Cox media analyst Peter Cox suggests it's political.
The big thing for Laundy is the gambling that in his all his hotels, he's got about 40 pubs in New South Wales alone. He wants political strength to ensure that he doesn't lose that gambling facility that's in his pubs and can be using it as a way of promoting his pubs as well. So this is a very substantial business that the Laundy family have created in Australia, and they will look as though they're going to keep on progressing, and they will have some political clout now with the radio stations.
At the same time as selling its radio stations, Nine Entertainment has bought outdoor advertisement company QMS from private equity group Quadrant for $850 million.
As you know, when you drive along the highways, there's the old-fashioned billboards, but they've been replaced now by modern ones that have got where you can change, they're digitally controlled, you can change the message. Remember, you've only got a limited number of seconds that a driver sees your billboard that is there. So that has been a high growth segment of the media market for the last probably 5 to 10 years.
Nine has also offloaded its regional New South Wales TV station NBN to long-standing affiliate WIN.
Rachel Hayter reporting. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Ahead, Aussies Olivia Gadecki and John Peers come from behind to win the mixed doubles final at the Australian Open.
The extraordinary thing about this match, the Australian pair were never in the lead in the entire match at any stage. They just clung on and clung on in rear guard action the entirety of the match.
Exporters are urging the federal government to tread carefully as it works to end the Chinese lease of the Port of Darwin and return it to Australian hands. This week, China's ambassador to Australia indicated his country may retaliate if the government forces a Chinese company to sell the port lease because of national security concerns. Barley growers are among those who suffered from years of punitive Chinese trade tariffs, and they're just one group worried that any fresh damage to the nation's relationship with China will affect trade. Jane Barden has more.
The possibility of China hitting Australia with new trade barriers if a Chinese company is forced to give up the port of Darwin has farmers worried. Brett Hosking is president of the Victorian Farmers Federation and a grain grower. He says 3 years of Chinese tariffs, which only ended recently, cut deep, and a repeat needs to be avoided.
And I guess it's moments like this that are the true test of the diplomatic power of any government. When tensions come along, that's when we actually test the mettle of our Australian leaders, our Australian government, and their ability to act as diplomats within the world.
Would you be worried if this isn't handled well that your industry could potentially even see tariffs being threatened again?
Oh, absolutely. Our industry's suffered a great deal. Our rural communities, when we saw barley tariffs introduced, when we saw beef tariffs introduced, when we've seen quotas put on Australian agricultural exports into China. What that practically means is that our small rural communities suffer the most.
Ownership of the Port of Darwin has been a source of controversy for years. In 2015, the Northern Territory government sold the port to Chinese company Landbridge on a 99-year lease for $500 million. Some criticised the move, arguing it compromised Australia's security. Before last year's federal election, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese promised to bring the port back into Australian hands. That's despite ASIO, the Defence Department and Home Affairs finding Chinese company ownership of the port doesn't pose a national security risk. This week in Darwin, Anthony Albanese reiterated his plan will go ahead.
There are commercial negotiations and those commercial negotiations are continuing. We will ensure it comes back into Australian hands.
When asked about the port lease in Canberra on Wednesday, China's Ambassador Zhao Chen warned China will respond to any move to force Landbridge to sell the Darwin port lease.
The Chinese government has an obligation to protect the interest, the legitimate interest of Chinese companies overseas. So if anything happens, like the port will be taken back by force or forceful measures, then we have an obligation to take measures to protect the Chinese company's interest.
In response, Deputy Prime Minister Richard Marles dug in on Thursday.
Clearly, it's very much within the right of the government to pursue the course that we are as a government.
Landbridge's non-executive director Terry O'Connor says the company has no desire to sell the port and sees no security reason to do so. But he says the company is in talks with the federal government.
We're very happy with the way the port's running, and at this stage we've got no real need that we would see to sell the port or move out of the current lease arrangements that we enjoy.
Has the federal government, as well as, you know, making public statements about the port, actually been talking to you about its future as well?
We've been engaging government at many levels over the last 6 months or so, and those engagements continue to be ongoing.
Former China-Australia Business Council board member and now analyst Daryl Guppy says the plan to take back the port lease damages investors' confidence in Australia.
It raises the perception of sovereign risk in Australia. That means if you're a foreign company investing in Australia, how can you be certain that 5 or 10 or 15 years down the track that the government's not going to change its mind and come back and try some compulsory acquisition?
La Trobe University national security analyst Dr. Viktor Abramovich says the two countries' governments have painted themselves into corners, but neither appears to want a forced sale of the port lease.
They're both, you know, making loud noises to some degree, but they'd really want the situation just to quietly go away because it's to no one's benefit. If a commercially attractive proposition could be reached, particularly if Canberra potentially helps support that or fund it, then you get a situation where everyone wins. So that's what I would expect and hope to happen.
Farmer Brett Hosking says the federal government must work very carefully to find a solution.
To ensure that we maintain our security, any security concerns around the Port of Darwin, but also maintain that trading relationship with what is our strongest global trading partner, the Chinese population.
Victorian Farmers Federation President Brett Hosking talking there to Jane Barden. Aussies Olivia Gadecki and John Peers have given the crowd at Melbourne Park something to cheer about this afternoon, claiming the Australian Open mixed doubles crown for the second year running. Not since Jana Novotná and Jim Pugh in 1989 has a pair managed to defend their mixed title in Melbourne, and the last Australian duo to do so was Margaret Court and Ken Fletcher in the early 1960s. Tanya Dendrinos prepared this report.
Appears to serve championship point, a second chance for the Aussies. Piers serves a fault.
Aussie tennis fans were on the edge of their seats this afternoon. Olivia Gadecki and John Peers out to defend their mixed doubles title against French opponents Kristina Mladenovic and Manuel Ginar.
Second serve on championship point. Piers kick serve back to Ginar. He nets it. It's the mixed doubles double for Peers and Gadecki.
It's been 37 years since a mixed doubles pairing defended a title at the Australian Open.
To accept the champions trophies.
23-year-old Olivia Gadecki soaking up the achievement.
I can't believe we're in this position right now, but first of all, I'd like to thank our opponents for such a great match, and you guys had such an amazing week, so congrats. Piersy, for, you know, wanting to play with me again this year. Thank you so much for letting me share the court with you, and, you know, to hold the trophy again this year is incredible.
The feeling mutual from 37-year-old playing partner John Peers.
Olivia, I'm sort of speechless, but thank you for playing with me again. We had great fun this week and somehow snuck away with this one, but it's been so much fun sharing the court with you.
And of course, a word for his home crowd.
Thank you to my friends and family. I couldn't have done it without you guys. It's been so much fun to play in Australia. We don't get to do it that often, but to be able to get another title in front of everyone is even sweeter, and still got a little goosebumps with this one. But lastly, but lastly, you guys, thank you for making this place so amazing. We love playing in Australia. Your support is just undoubtedly unbelievable. So thank you to everyone. Thanks for coming and coming out.
Mixed doubles is the most underestimated, undervalued sport in the world, I reckon.
That's former Australian tennis player come ABC commentator John Alexander.
The extraordinary thing about this match, the Australian pair were never in the lead in the entire match at any stage until 9-8 in the tiebreaker in the final set. It's an extraordinary match where they just clung on and clung on, a rearguard action, the entirety of the match.
He says times have changed significantly when it comes to singles and doubles tennis.
If you look back at Margaret Court and Ken Fletcher, who won and successfully defended their title, they also won the Grand Slam in mixed doubles, and that was in the amateur era before open tennis. Ken would have been about five in the world, and Margaret was number one in the world, but you had the very, very top players in the world playing mixed doubles and playing men's doubles, for that matter, which isn't the case anymore.
So what's behind Australia's ongoing doubles success?
Part of it is because Davis Cup was so often decided by the doubles matches, four singles matches in the old format and one doubles match, but it was the doubles match that often decided the title. So we had a huge concentration on doubles. A lot of our inter-club competitions were played in doubles, and we had a very formatted way of playing. Virtually any two Australians could play with each other.
And just as Gadecki and Peers did today, two fellow Aussie wildcard entrants will take to Rod Laver Arena for the men's doubles final. Tom Lana is Tennis Australia's chief tennis officer.
Tomorrow we've got Jason Kubler and Mark Polmans playing the doubles against Christian Harrison and Neil Skupski, the number six seeds. And Jason Kubler partnered with Rinki Hijikata in 2023 to win the men's doubles. So he's looking for his second doubles title. Obviously, the partner of Matty Inglis, who made the fourth round here at the Australian Open. The match is on at 2:30 tomorrow and open to all our ground pass holders. So we'd love as much Australian support as possible to come down and get behind Mark and Jason and see if they can get across the line.
Tomorrow, the men's and women's doubles finals will be played ahead of the women's singles final, with world number one Naryna Sabalenka out to redeem last year's loss. Her opponent is Elena Rybakina.
We're expecting probably between 1.3 and 1.4 million people across the 3 weeks. So we've had, you know, really great crowds right across the 3 weeks, just around 1.2 million last year, so significantly up on last year.
The men's singles final will be played on Sunday.
Tanya Dendrinos. And that's PM for this week. PM's producer is David Sparks. Technical production by Joram Toth and David Sargent. I'm Samantha Donovan. PM will be back on Monday evening. I hope you have a great weekend. Good night.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. We know he loves McDonald's, but who knew Donald Trump was so passionate about milk, whole milk to be precise. Well, it's become an obsession for the US president and his health secretary, RFK Jr., who thinks everyone should be drinking it. Today, Yasmin Tiag from The Atlantic on milk and why the Trump administration has turned the food pyramid on its head. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.